and bring me back the minute Beth is well, the identical minute. And go to the theatre, truly? A dozen theatres, if we may. Well, I guess I will, said Amy slowly. Good girl. Call Meg and tell her you'll give in, said Laurie, with an approving pat, which annoyed Amy more than the giving in. Meg and Joe came running down to behold the miracle which had been wrought, and Amy, feeling very precious and self-sacrificing, promised to go, if the doctor said Beth was going to be ill. "How is the little dear?" asked Laurie, for Beth was his especial pet, and he felt more anxious about her than he liked to show. "She is lying down on Mother's bed and feels better. The baby's death troubled her, but I dare say she has only got cold. Hannah says she thinks so, but she looks worried, and that makes me fidgety," answered Meg. "What a trying world it is," said Jo, rumpling up her hair in a fretful sort of way. "No sooner do we get out of one trouble than down comes another. There doesn't seem to be anything to hold on to when Mother's gone, so I'm all at sea."
"Well, don't make a porcupine of yourself. It isn't becoming. Settle your wig, Jo, and tell me if I shall telegraph to your mother or do anything," asked Laurie, who never had been reconciled to the loss of his friend's one beauty.
"That is what troubles me," said Meg. "I think we ought to tell her if Beth is really ill. But Hannah says we mustn't, for Mother can't leave Father, and it will only make them anxious. Beth won't be sick long, and Hannah knows just what to do. And Mother said we were to mind her, so I suppose we must. But it doesn't seem quite right to me."
Well, I can't say. Suppose you ask Grandfather after the doctor has been."
"We will. Joe, go and get Dr. Bangs at once," commanded Meg. "We can't decide anything till he has been."
"Stay where you are, Joe. I'm errand boy to this establishment," said Laurie, taking up his cap.
"I'm afraid you are busy," began Meg.
"No, I've done my lessons for the day."
"Do you study in vacation time?" asked Joe.
"I follow the good example my neighbours set me," was Laurie's answer, as he swung himself out of the room. "I have great hopes of my boy," observed Joe, watching him fly over the fence with an approving smile.
"He does very well for a boy," was Meg's somewhat ungracious answer, for the subject did not interest her. Dr. Bangs came, said Beth had symptoms of the fever, but thought she would have it lightly, though he looked sober over the Hummel story. Amy was ordered off at once, and provided with something to ward off danger, she departed in great state, with Joe and Laurie as escort. Aunt March received them with her usual hospitality.
"What do you want now?" she asked, looking sharply over her spectacles, while the parrot, sitting on the back of her chair, called out, "Go away! No boys allowed here!"
Laurie retired to the window, and Joe told her story.
"No more than I expected, if you were allowed to go poking about among poor folks. Amy can stay and make herself useful if she isn't sick, which I've no doubt she will be. Looks like it now."
"Don't cry, child. It worries me to hear people sniff." Amy was on the point of crying, but Laurie slyly pulled the parrot's tail, which caused Polly to utter an astonished croak and call out, "Bless my boots!" in such a funny way that she laughed instead.
"What do you hear from your mother?" asked the old lady gruffly.
"Father is much better," replied Joe, trying to keep sober.
"Oh, is he? Well, that won't last long, I fancy. March never had any stamina,"
was the cheerful reply.
"Ha, ha! Never say die. Take a pinch of snuff. Goodbye, goodbye," squalled Polly,
dancing on her perch and clawing at the old lady's cap as Laurie tweaked him in the rear.
"Hold your tongue, you disrespectful old bird. And, Joe, you better go at once. It isn't proper to be gadding about so late with a rattle-pated boy like—" "Hold your tongue, you disrespectful old bird!" cried Polly, tumbling off the chair with a bounce, and running to peck the rattle-pated boy, who was shaking with laughter at the last speech.
"I don't think I can bear it, but I'll try," thought Amy, as she was left alone with Aunt March.
"Get along, you fright!" screamed Polly, and at that rude speech, Amy could not restrain a sniff.
Chapter 18 Dark Days. Beth did have the fever, and was much sicker than anyone but Hannah and the doctor suspected. The girls knew nothing about illness, and Mr. Lawrence was not allowed to see her. So Hannah had everything all her own way. And busy Dr. Bangs did his best, but left a good deal to the excellent nurse. Meg stayed at home, lest she should infect the Kings, and kept house, feeling very anxious and a little guilty when she wrote letters in which no mention was made of Beth's illness. She could not think it right to deceive her mother, but she had been bidden to mind Hannah, and Hannah wouldn't hear of Mrs. March being told and worried just for such a trifle. Jo devoted herself to Beth day and night. Not a hard task, for Beth was very patient and bore her pain uncomplainingly, as long as she could control herself. But there came a time when, during the fever fits, she began to talk in a hoarse, broken voice, to play on the coverlet as if on her beloved little piano, and try to sing with the throat so swollen that there was no music left. A time when she did not know the familiar faces round her, but addressed them by wrong names, and called imploringly for her mother. Then Jo grew frightened. Meg begged to be allowed to write the truth, and even Hannah said she would think of it, though there was no danger yet. A letter from Washington added to their trouble, for Mr. March had had a relapse, and could not think of coming home for a long while. How dark the days seemed now, how sad and lonely the house, and how heavy were the hearts of the sisters as they worked and waited, while the shadow of death hovered over the once happy home. Then it was that Margaret, sitting alone with tears dropping often on her work, felt how rich she had been in things more precious than any luxuries money could buy, in love, protection, peace and health, the real blessings of life. Then it was that Joe, living in the darkened room, with that suffering little sister always before her eyes, and that pathetic voice sounding in her ears, learned to see the beauty and the sweetness of Beth's nature, to feel how deep and tender a place she filled in all hearts, and to acknowledge the worth of Beth's unselfish ambition to live for others, and make home happy by the exercise of those simple virtues which all may possess, and which all should love and value more than talent, wealth, or beauty. And Amy, in her exile, longed eagerly to be at home, that she might work for Beth, feeling now that no service would be hard or irksome, and remembering with regretful grief how many neglected tasks those willing hands had done for her. Laurie haunted the house like a restless ghost, and Mr. Lawrence locked the grand piano, because he could not bear to be reminded of the young neighbor who used to make the twilight pleasant for him. Everyone missed Beth. The milkman, baker, grocer, and butcher inquired how she did. Poor Mrs. Hummel came to beg pardon for her thoughtlessness, and to get a shroud for Minna. The neighbors sent all sorts of comforts and good wishes, and even those who knew her best were surprised to find how many friends shy little Beth had made. Meanwhile, she lay on her bed with old Joanna at her side, for even in her wanderings she did not forget her forlorn protégé. She longed for her cats, but would not have them brought, lest they should get sick. And in her quiet hours she was full of anxiety about Jo. She sent loving messages to Amy, bade them tell her mother that she would write soon, and often begged for pencil and paper to try to say a word, that father might not think she had neglected him. But soon even these intervals of consciousness ended, and she lay hour after hour, tossing to and fro, with incoherent words on her lips, or sank into a heavy sleep which brought her no refreshment. Dr. Bangs came twice a day. Hannah sat up at night. Meg kept a telegram in her desk, all ready to send off at any minute, and Jo never stirred from Beth's side. The 1st of December was a wintry day indeed to them, for a bitter wind blew, snow fell fast, and the year seemed getting ready for its death. When Dr. Bangs came that morning, he looked long at Beth, held the hot hand in both his own a minute, and laid it gently down, saying in a low tone to Hannah,